talking about the road construction that was on Reith Avenue, and that probably is part of the reason why it's not down at the pool area.
Yeah,
because that's a little difficult to get around those areas. So we got that information updated for you.
All right. Thank you, Dave. And now we are joined here a little late here in the program, but we appreciate them adjusting for us on the fly this morning. We've got Mayor Wynn Butler, City Manager Ron Fear joining us via Zoom. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Brandon.
Pleasure to have you on. City Commission has a meeting tonight, 7 o'clock, and that's why we have you guys on, of course, this morning to preview that. And some pretty interesting topics here, really, on all three. And I'm going to work my way backwards here. Item C, and then we'll go up to item A. But item C has to do with the face mask ordinance, which is set to expire on April 1st. And tonight there's a first reading of whether or not to extend that beyond April 1st or allow it to expire. So I guess we'll kind of talk about that here and kind of what is the thinking here this morning.
Sure. Thanks, Brandon. Just the background there. Back in January, the commission approve the extension of the face mask ordinance through April 1st. Originally, it was recommended to maybe go through the school year date in May, and the majority of commissioners decided that April 1st, let's see how things are, you know, a couple months from now. And so that's why we're revisiting it. The commission also has a policy where if everybody's in concurrence, that you can pass a ordinance on one reading. But if a commissioner desires to have two readings, any commissioner can make that request. And so we typically have two legislative meetings a month. And so in order to pass an ordinance with two readings, we need to start that process this evening at the first meeting of the month. And so the draft ordinance does have a provision for extending it basically through about the middle of May, which would coincide with both K states and K through 12 here in Manhattan. So that's really the provision. There are a couple of issues. Obviously, you might recall that we kind of got into this business of the city-wide face mask ordinance because we're in two counties and we had two differing county health orders. And so we wanted something that was consistent within the city limits in both counties. And that was really one of the primary reasons for doing it. Also, the enforcement measures are a little bit different from a county order as opposed to a city ordinance. We also have a provision that we didn't have last time, and that's a presidential executive order as well as a Transportation Security Administration order that's going to require face masks at our airport. And so in order to be compliant with our federal operations, which has TSA contractors there, a need to have a face mask ordinance in place and be able to enforce it. So that's a minimum that we really need moving forward in order to ensure that we can maintain compliance and keep our eligibility for federal grants there.
All right. Well, I'll ask Mayor Butler here a question on this. And I know
we have a little bit of a different take than Ron does on why the ordinance was passed. He's absolutely correct. The dilemma we have is we've got, you know, a city that's sitting in two counties. And then we've got, you know, the federal government giving us a rule on the FAA. So we need to look at that. I've always been of the opinion that our process for handling emergencies has always been we set up an EOC, put the experts in it, put an incident commander in charge, and they call the shots. And we went off the rails last March on that, because the city went its own way and didn't follow the EOC policy. And originally the health department didn't have a mask mandate. And so the city put one in beforehand. Pot County, I don't think, ever had one. And so we've always been inconsistent, and Ron's 100% correct. We need to be consistent. So, you know, I would like to do something that would cause that to be consistent, which might basically be to pass some kind of a resolution or ordinance that says the city of Manhattan will follow the Riley County Health Department order. And I realize enforcement's different, and we can't just say we're we're going to do what they want to do, but we could take the content of it and make that our resolution and essentially say we're going to follow Raleigh County Health Department orders citywide and federal order at the airport for as long as they're in effect and not have to revisit this again. And let our EOC process, you know, play itself out so that if Julie eliminates it in 2 months or 3 months, then it just goes away. But I'm personally tired of seeing it on the agenda every, you know, 6 weeks where we get everybody's hair on fire and I get 200 emails, you know, split 50-50 because cities apparently polarized on it. You know, there's a number of people that are vehemently against the mask thing and we get a lot of emails that express it that way exactly. And then there's others that would just as soon lock their neighbors in jail for not wearing a mask. So we've got extremes on both ends. And I'm not sure what the happy medium is, but I would just like to defer to, you know, we've put our local experts in the EOC. So why don't we listen to them?
All right. Yeah, I guess the only issue there, and this has been talked about, obviously, being in two counties, most of the stuff on the Pottawatomie County side is retail. So do you have confidence then in that case in the retailers to go ahead and enforce their own policies?
Well, that's why I think here's where it becomes strange. If we were to say, okay, ours expires 1 April. If I'm a restaurant on the Raleigh County side of the city, you know, I would now be equal to Pott County because they don't have a mandate. But if we extend it, then if you're going to say Carlos O'Kelly's that's across the Marlette Ditch, the rules are different there than they would be in Aggieville or on points. And I'm not sure that levels the playing field and that confuses everybody. Now, I also know that, you know, I've talked to some of the business owners and bar owners and they're split. You know, you've got some that don't want to loosen it up and there's others that like it. They think it's 100%. I think they had a party at one of the places last night at midnight because the dance floor was open. You know, it was Monday at like, you know, 12:01 or whatever. In the morning. And so even the proprietors have got different ideas, but the beauty of the health department order is if you want to maintain current restrictions in your establishment, you can do so. So nobody's preventing you from doing that. But it's interesting that, you know, why would you want to, if I'm a restaurant that desires restrictions, why do I want to impose those restrictions on another restaurant that doesn't? And then your clientele, well, they can make a choice. If you want to go to one with restrictions, and I'm sure the way the city split, that would work. Certain people are going to feel safer going to a certain place, and certain people are going to say, we don't care, we're going to go to other places. So let's just let that happen. You know, individual choice. And that seems to be a theme in a lot of the emails. It's interesting because I keep a running count of these things on how people feel one way or the other. And, you know, 6 months ago, it was predominantly, you know, a lot of fear factor. We got to do this. And now I'm seeing a lot of emails that are saying, wait a minute, why can't we have freedom of choice? So the pendulum swung a little bit, I think, in the other direction.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a big part of that, too, is the improving case numbers. That has to be playing into the factor a little bit here, I would imagine, especially with some of the things opening up. And I know everyone's going to be, you know, well, are we opening up too quickly? But I think at some point there's also that when is the appropriate time? I don't know that anybody really has the right answer there.
But I think that, you know, we got to give credit for the, you know, federal government's ability to stimulate the vaccine research. And that's the huge role. I mean, without that, if we hadn't started vaccinating in Raleigh County, and when we've gotten the phase one thing done, went to phase two, wanted to go to phase three, but I think the state government sort of goofed us up there a little bit. And I sent a note to the you know, EOC and the health department director, because a couple of the restaurant owners had said, why don't we see if we can influence the phasing thing and vaccinate restaurant workers? Because if you've gone, you know, 100% capacity, it seems like, okay, why not vaccinate those folks who would tend to be more exposed? And if that's possible, I hope they can do it. I think the Kansas order says something about food workers. And I guess if you can classify restaurant employees as food workers, then you could legally get away with, you know, giving them the vaccine. And so I think that has been, that's been just an outstanding thing. And I know that, you know, most of the, you know, people 65 and older that have wanted to get the vaccine have been able to do so, even though you might have to stand in line for an hour. I think the process the health department put in place is working as well as can be expected.
Yeah. What was your guys' reaction to the announcement that phase three is being delayed here a little bit? To me, the way I interpreted it, at least last night, was that maybe the state was maybe punishing Raleigh County just a little bit here because we're moving so quickly and we want to go ahead and get more people vaccinated, but they kind of pumped the brakes on that.
Yeah, I don't like that kind of bureaucracy. It's like what happened in New York, where you put these stringent rules in there and you're afraid you're going to get in trouble. So what happens is vaccines expire and get thrown out. And that's about as dumb as it gets when bureaucracy starts throwing away a thing like a vaccine that's in short supply and high demand. I mean, you got to put those shots in people's arms and don't let them just sit there on the shelf. It's just not helping us.
I think some of our demographics are playing into that too. I mean, we don't have a very large, comparatively speaking, elderly community compared to a lot of counties. We have a robust healthcare department that has its own clinic and its own staff that can administer that. You get some of these smaller counties that have few staff, and so they're don't have the same number of EMS folks to administer, you know, just the number of doctors and medical facilities and clinics that we have that has the distribution system set up. So they started out with some challenges, but they've come right along and really streamlined operations and been able to be very efficient about getting vaccinations out. And so I think that has allowed us to move forward a little bit. I think one of the bigger issues is probably just the, should there be some local flexibility and prioritizing who might get the shots? I mean, I think if you follow the state rules, you know, they're saying a young college person that's a critical worker at the grocery store has higher priority than a 64-year-old with heart conditions. So, you know, I'm not sure that's true. And I think there is some flexibility for the medical community and doctors to step in and make that call so that some of those priority folks can maybe get that medicine. But, and, you know, those are, again, you know, we've never really been in this situation before. So, you know, everybody's creating standards and trying to follow them best they can. And, you know, the state's trying to do the best they can and trying to get the vaccine out to those who most need it. And there's a lot of counties where that hasn't happened in phase two yet.
Sure. You know, and it's got to make you optimistic with as well as vaccines are going about getting the economy reopened here in Manhattan, perhaps sooner than other parts of the state. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, Mayor Butler?
Well, I think that's essential. I mean, if you look at you know, what was done in the pandemic in the interest of health. And I always thought there was a failure to balance the three things that were taking place. We had a health problem. We had an economic problem. We had a panic problem. And all we did was concentrate on the health and everything else was thrown under the bus. And, you know, restaurants are closed. People are going out of business. They've lost their livelihood. And so it's time to, you know, slowly, you know, get things back on track. And I think the call the health department made is the right one. We're starting to move in that direction. You know, I went around to a couple of restaurants yesterday just to get a feel for, you know, what happened when the occupancy was opened. They weren't filled to the brim because the fear factor is still at work. People are going to make that individual risk assessment choice, and they may not feel comfortable going into a packed bar, and so they won't. And a couple of the owners told me that, you know, they've got issues actually with just turning the spigot back on because they don't have the staff in the kitchen, they don't have the wait staff, and one of the other interesting things also is a couple of them have really, you know, launched a takeout business, and that wasn't there before. So if you still maintain the takeout business and you have 100% occupancy, it crushes their kitchen, and so they're busy trying to figure out, you know, which way to go. And I know some of the Aggieville bars, you know, said great, we can stay open till 2 o'clock. Some of the others here on the west side, they just increased their hours from 9 to 10 because they've actually found that that may work better. There's not that many people that come in that late. And so I think there's going to be some maybe long-term adjustments as bars and restaurants tailor to the clientele. And that's where that fear factor comes in. Like, I'm not somebody who likes to dance. I know a couple places in Aggieville, they're just happy that the dance floors are open. And so people that like that are going to go there and feel comfortable, and then others won't. And so I think the marketplace is going to play a big role in this. And a number of people sent me emails saying, hey, we're adults. We're smart enough, intelligent enough to make our own risk assessment. We think the city commission should let us do so. And I've always felt that way. That's where you do your own risk assessment, and it's your choice between liberty and security.
All right. I think we have a phone call, and then we'll take the phone call. Maybe we'll answer it after the break, because we do need to take a break as well. Go ahead, Paul. You're on In Focus.
Well, good morning. I think we're back to other issues we've had in the past. There'll be more said than done. On the whole situation. Yesterday, I heard on the radio that the county health officer, which she's doing a wonderful job, was going to lift everything today to just a mask and distancing. And an hour later, I heard on a national broadcast that from back east in Washington, where we're supposed to be getting our directions, but don't get very good ones, but don't change anything because we've got new strains coming through. We'll be right back in the same situation. I think is what it is an old-time saying. Maybe some of you people have heard. Too many cooks spoil the broth. Actually, is what we need to do is just get one person in charge instead of a while back the former mayor wanted masks. Somebody didn't want masks. Pott County did. This place didn't. This place didn't. So we can't even decide where to have a meeting, so how can we decide what to do? Why don't we just listen to one person back east instead of everybody trying to be in charge and have a legacy that I did this and I did that? We had that happen with the no talking on cell phones in the only city in the state. That was by Mr. Bob Strawn, but I don't know where he is now. But anyway, I hope these comments don't rub anybody's feathers, but they're all the truth. They're all the truth and nothing but the truth. And if everybody would just sit back and relax, we'll get through it. And my saying is, wear a mask, stay low, and pray. And Mr. Butler's doing a good job. We need more Mr. Butlers and more Mr. Dobsons that are level-headed and use good thought.